You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, we're doing a new crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/kickasspolitics. That's Patreon spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. With Patreon, you can pledge a certain amount each month, and in return for helping to sustain the show, you're going to get some great new benefits like back episodes, exclusive content, show merchandise, shoutouts on the podcast, video hangouts, invitations to live events, and more. Again, go to patreon.com/kickasspolitics. Thanks for your support, and thanks for continuing to listen. And now, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to the show. You're in for a treat today, because I'm going to turn you on to one of my favorite podcasts, and the host of it, the hilarious and ever so politically correct...
I can't do that anymore. The hilarious and ever so politically correct Gilbert Gottfried. Known as the comedian's comedian, Gilbert Gottfried began doing stand-up at open mic nights in New York City at just the age of 15. And after just a few years on the stand-up comedy scene, he was recruited to join the cast of Saturday Night Live for their disastrous sixth season. But Gilbert returned to doing stand-up and soon became known for his memorable roles on TV and in film, including shows like The Cosby Show, Family Guy, Hannah Montana, Anger Management, and his recurring role on, of all things, Law & Order Special Victims Unit, as well as movies like Beverly Hills Cop 2, Problem Child and Problem Child 2, Look Who's Talking To, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, and as Abraham Lincoln in A Million Ways to Die in the West. But you probably know him best as the parrot Iago from Disney's animated classic Aladdin. He's been a regular on late-night talk shows like The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Show with Seth Meyers, At Midnight with Chris Hardwick, and The Howard Stern Show, as well as Hollywood Squares and reality TV shows like The Apprentice, Celebrity Wife Swap, and Food Network's Rachel vs. Guy Celebrity Cook-Off. Gilbert Gottfried has made numerous memorable appearances on the Comedy Central series The Burn with Jeff Ross and the Comedy Central Roasts, including his now legendary performance on the Comedy Central Roast of Hugh Hefner, which inspired the documentary The Aristocrats. And most recently, he has a podcast on the Sideshow Network called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, where he and his co-host Frank Santopadre talk about classic movies and TV with Hollywood legends and behind-the-scenes talents. Today we'll cover some of those legends and the ongoing problem he has with his podcast guest kicking the bucket before they make it on his show. He'll do his impression of my recent podcast guest David Steinberg, plus impressions of Vincent Price, early Larry David doing stand-up, old Lucille Ball, and senile Groucho. He talks about his lifelong battle with political correctness, from his joke at the Friars Club roast just 2 days after 9/11, to his tweets about the Japan tsunami that got him fired as the voice of the Aflac Duck. He also talks about the living hell of working on the infamous season 6 of Saturday Night Live, and how he found out that he got the axe from that gig. Plus, I verify the legend about Milton Berle. You know what I'm talking about. And fair warning, folks, while this interview is pretty tame by Gilbert Gottfried standards, it's still Gilbert being Gilbert. So you know what you're getting into. Coming up with the hilarious Gilbert Gottfried in just a moment.
Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
I'm sitting down today with Gilbert Gottfried, my favorite comedian and actor, and you know him as the Aflac Duck and the parrot from Aladdin.
You used to know me as the Aflac Duck.
Well, we still remember. Yeah, and we'll definitely get into that, but you're my favorite comedian. Anytime people ask me who makes me laugh, I tell them Gilbert Gottfried. And I'll tell you, I saw you a few months ago at this thing called Riot LA, which, for clarification, is a comedy festival. You weren't looting stores or setting stuff on fire or anything. But you killed, and you finished your set, and you walked past me, and I shook your hand. I told you I'm a huge fan of the podcast. And you looked at me as if I jumped out from the bushes, and I was thinking to myself, does this guy have any fans? He doesn't seem to be used to this.
I'm looking at you like you jumped out from the bushes right now.
I did. Yeah, I did, from Central Park. Well, when you were coming up as a stand-up comic, I heard that you used to be the guy that the club owners would send in to clear the room at the end of the night.
I used to go on and because I didn't care. I mean, back then I just didn't care. I'd go on. If I did great, that was great. If I did horrible and the audience hated me, that was also fine. And so if they had some people hanging out and they wanted to get rid of, they'd send me on.
What material would you use when you wanted to get rid of people?
Oh, God, there were so many. Just stuff that just plain was only funny to me.
Oh, okay. You know, I love your stand-up albums, and you kind of jump between the old jokey kind of stand-up Milton Berle, guy walks into a doctor's office.
Oh, yeah.
And observational humor. Do you have a particular preference?
No. I like to get up there and then get off as quick as possible, get my check, and go home. It's my artistic viewpoint.
Wow, you really romanticize being a stand-up comic. You know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, just the other day I had David Steinberg on, who I think you've had on the podcast,
David
too.
David Steinberg. You know, when I started, it was in Canada. And, you know, in Canada, they would have these little coffee shops. And that was it. That was the way you did comedy in Canada.
And it's funny. I didn't even notice till I interviewed him. He still totally has a Canadian accent.
Oh, my God. It didn't go away. It's gotten worse. Yeah. Now it sounds like a speech defect.
Well,
it's totally turned into.
Yeah, I know. It's like a Sesame Street character or something.
Yeah.
Well, I asked him because I have long had this theory, and a lot of people kind of call me out on it. I keep saying to friends, I say, every person should have to do a 5-7 minute set at an open mic night and just try their hand at stand-up comedy, because I think it would be a profound growth experience. And I say all this stuff. You'll learn something about yourself. You'll learn humility and empathy. And I built it up in my mind. And then I asked David Steinberg that. And he's like, oh, no, don't do that. You don't want to do it. It's like, now I'm terrified. I'm afraid it'd be a soul-crushing experience and I'll be suicidal or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like I guess how they want people like to jump out of a plane or something. And which reminds me, there was an episode, you talk about jumping the shark. And I had Henry Winkler on my podcast.
Oh,
we
actually
talked about jumping the shark.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Henry Winkler's, you are the most wonderful person I've ever met in my life.
That's a lot like your that's a lot like your Vincent Price impression too.
And then Henry Winkler started going, the tingler's loose in the theater. Scream, scream for your lives. The tingler's loose. I feel lonely, let go of you if you scream. But there was an episode of the Andy Griffith Show, and this what? Shows where
with Vincent Price?
Yeah, no. I see that. Yeah, that special.
It's when the creepy effeminate guy comes to Mayberry, and Andy has to hide Opie.
Yes. Because, well, Vincent Price, I think he showed up on, what was it, the Brady Bunch or something? They were in Hawaii.
You did a ton of cameos on everything, it
seems.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Vincent Price in it. I just got, on the Andy Griffith Show, Aunt B goes parachute jumping.
I don't remember that episode. Really?
Later when they were in color.
Was this when they were renegotiating her contract? Well, it was a cliffhanger end of the season.
As I remember, they did that really horrible, phony, sky in the background.
Oh, yeah, in front of a screen, yeah.
Yeah, and they had Aunt B go skydiving, and it's like, you know, you talked about jumping the shark. That's when it's time.
Yeah,
man, that show.
You're sure of this? I've never heard of this,
yes,
and I love that show.
I bet you could look that up.
I will. I'm definitely going to look that one up. Well, I'm curious, who were some of the comedians that you came up with when you were starting out in the clubs?
Oh, God, let's see. I was there starting way back, but along the way, Larry David was there.
Okay.
Let's see. There was, Bill Maher would come in, Dennis Miller, Paul Reiser, Jerry Seinfeld.
Okay, so you had a pretty good class there.
Yeah.
Now, what was Larry David like back then? Because everyone says that he was just such a pain in the ass as a comic.
Oh, yeah. He would get angry. You'd get angry
at the audience or himself.
Oh, yeah. I think both. I think he's probably angry at himself and he took it out on the audience. And what was fun about watching him was he'd get into fights with audience members.
That's how you win friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So
what would he fight about?
Someone wasn't laughing or someone said something. he would start fighting with people. And one time
he would argue over whether he was funny or not.
Oh, yeah. And one time he was yelling at some guy and the guy said, "You want to take it outside?" And he said, "Yeah." And then this guy stood up and he was a mountain. And so someone said, no, I don't think you should fight with this guy. We'll get him another free beer.
Yeah, and wasn't there some story like he was telling a joke that referenced a bungalow, and like nobody in New York knows what a bungalow is. That's a California thing. And then nobody was laughing. Someone yelled out, "What's a bungalow?" And he's like, "You guys are idiots," or something. Yeah. And he stormed off the stage.
You don't know what a bungalow is? it's 20 minutes. 20 minutes. You know?
I remember one time. He was having a fight with someone in the audience, and the guy in the audience yells to Larry David. He goes, "Oh yeah, well your mother fucks my dog," and Larry goes, "Oh yeah, well I bet your dog doesn't enjoy it."
Oh my God, those must have been some fun years. I want to ask you something because, you know, I used to hang out at the old Friars Club in Beverly Hills when it was I was like the youngest guy. I was like probably 20 years old or something. And I was their youngest member and I would hang out there. And I know you hang out at the New York Friars Club here, which is still open. Their membership hasn't died off like the one in California. But Milton Berle once said to me, he gave me some advice. I don't know why he gave me this advice because I wasn't a comedian. I'm not sure who he thought I was. But he said to me something about the difference between a comic and a comedian. And he said, one tells funny stories and one tells stories a funny way. I forgot which one it is, but can you make any sense of that?
That's an old expression.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Just like stealing the jokes. He steals advice, too.
He's stealing advice. It's just like, I just came up with some advice. Brush your teeth after every meal.
Four scores and 7 years ago, as he lights his cigar. Was your stand-up career before SNL or before or after SNL?
Yeah, I was doing stand-up and, maybe just.
He's revived. Is that how you get the Gilbert voice going?
No, it's sometimes early in the morning. It's not that early, but it's early for me. And when I've done a show the night before, and sometimes I'll feel it. And I'll go, and I sound like Lucy. Todd, of the last season of the Lucy show, what was that? That was Life with Lucy.
Right, yeah. And I remember just the other day, I was listening to the soundtrack from MAME. The movie version.
Coax the blues right out of the heart.
It was like listening to James Earl Jones after a bunch of cigars, trying to sing shit. I don't even know that octave was on the scale. She was like, man. And like all the cast and all the other singers were trying to figure out what key she was in and keep up with her and sing around her.
It's like, I remember they were doing a commercial years ago and they wanted it, Bogey and Bacall, with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Well, Lauren Bacall was still alive.
She was still around, yeah.
And so they got this guy who did a Humphrey Bogart imitation. But at that point...
Wait, what was this for? Oh, this is for the Lucy show?
No. This was some radio show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Some radio commercial.
Okay.
So they were going to have, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall for such and such a product. And now Lauren Bacall was still alive. Humphrey Bogart had been dead for years. So they got a guy to imitate Humphrey Bogart. And the problem was, at that point, Lauren Bacall was no kid anymore, and her voice was deeper than the guy doing Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, she probably sounded more like Bogey than the other guy.
Yeah, she was like, hi, Bogey. And he's like, hey, well, hello, playing again, team.
Well, the story of how she got that voice, right? Have you ever heard that one? I know you love old Hollywood lore.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, the story, I think, was that a studio exec or her acting coach, she had like one of those East Coast accents, kind of like, from the Philadelphia story or something. And when she came to Hollywood, her acting coach, I think it was, sent her out into the mountains for like 3 days and told her to just keep yelling at the top of her lungs. And then she came down from the mountains like Moses with a sexy, raspy voice, apparently. And then it just got lower and lower and raspier and raspier year by year. Well, you have, I have to say, I admire you because you've suffered your share of indignities as a comic and an actor. You got fired as the Aflac duck.
Yes.
You from that to working on the infamous Alan Thicke late night show. Yeah. But
first I was fired from Saturday Night Live.
That's what I was going to say. Was that the worst? Was that the most miserable experience of your life?
Well, being on it was certainly miserable because it was the worst time to be on Saturday Night Live.
Right. It was after Lauren had left.
Yeah. Lauren and Chevy and Belushi. And so it was kind of like if in the middle of Beatlemania, John, Paul, George, and Ringo left. And you said, now we've got four other schmucks. And so people and the press hated us even before we went on the air. There were articles being written and people writing angry letters like, how dare you continue this?
And it's funny because they still do that to this day. Like every 2 years, people start predicting SNL has jumped the shark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you, I don't know. What was it? Could they not find the niche for you or what was
it? Oh, that was pretty awful. And I remember what was funny is that they, now when I watch Saturday Night Live, I never watch it. It's one of those things like every couple of months I'm switching around and I'll stop. Yeah. And I'll go whenever I find myself going, oh, this sucks. Now, if I were, and then I go, wait a minute, I was there and it sucked even worse, you know.
And you were totally different back then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was totally.
At one point, am I right that they had you playing a corpse?
Yeah.
That's how hard it was to find a spot for you on that show.
Well, the writers hated me. I hated the writers. And I think they just wanted their revenge by having me as a corpse. You know, it's
you're like the least quiet guy I've ever met. So I can't even picture that.
Well, it saved money on getting a mannequin or something to throw on there.
Yeah. And how did you find out that you were fired from the show?
Oh, yes.
After 12 episodes?
Well, first, I remember at one point I was sitting in an office. It wasn't our office. It was just some empty office. Someone was out to lunch. And I was sitting there with Eddie Murphy, and we were talking. And then one of the girls who worked there pops her head in and she goes, oh, Eddie, there's a call for you on line 2. And he picks it up and he goes, yeah, yeah. Oh, shit. No, I won't tell anyone. I'm not going to tell anyone. No. Okay. All right. And before he even hangs up the phone, he goes, they just fired Gene Demanian.
And that was the producer who was subbing in for, who didn't, Gene Demanian did the Woody Allen movies and a bunch of theater and that kind of thing, but didn't really, SNL wasn't the right niche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was fired, and then we got Dick Ebersol is brought in.
Who I think of as a sports guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Perfect.
So, and he brings us all around. He says, okay, I'm the new producer. I'm going to make some little changes here. Nothing to worry about. Take a week off. Come back in a week. We'll get together. I'll tell you. And then so when we're getting together, it's all separate. Everyone waits outside the office and goes in separately. And you see people coming out, that's sometimes ominous, crying that they've just been fired. So while I'm waiting out there, there's some desk where they used to dump all the fan letters. And from some girl in Omaha, I see his address to me. So I figure I'm killing time reading my fan letters. And I open up from this like teenage girl in Omaha or something. And she goes, dear Gilbert, I'm so sorry about what happened to you.
So you were the last one to know.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were all ready to strut in there and renegotiate your contract. Wow. Well, yeah, that was pretty painful. Another one that we referenced earlier was the Aflac duck. For a number of years, you were the voice of the Aflac duck, and you got fired over a few tweets, some tsunami jokes when the tsunami hit in Japan, the Fukushima meltdown and all that stuff. Were they very classy about it, Aflac?
I found out I got fired on the internet. Yeah. Yeah, they didn't call me personally.
Well, is, look how far we've come from fan letters to emails.
So they fired me and milked it for all the publicity they could get and then hired a guy to imitate my voice for less money, thus bringing closure to a horrible tragedy.
But, you know, and there was the 9/11 joke that you made at the Friars Roast right after 9/11 few years ago.
Hugh Hefner.
Yeah. Are you ever amazed at all the righteous indignation that people come up with the moment that, you know, anyone cracks a joke that's quote unquote too soon?
Yeah. And that's another thing. like, if you say something too soon, like I do, you're a bad person. You're a bad and sensitive beast.
Yeah.
But if you wait a while, like you could do jokes about the Titanic and no one will say anything. But it's like, see, to me, waiting makes the joke more offensive. Because at least when I say it, part of what makes it funny is you're going, oh, my God, I can't believe he said it about something so horrible. And if you wait, what you're saying is, like if you do a Titanic joke, you're basically telling the audience, hey, you know, that was years ago, and even their grandkids are dead.
Doesn't
fuck
matter.
Them.
Yeah.
Fuck the people who died on the Titanic. And that makes you a good person.
Yeah. Now, what was the joke that you told, what was it, 2 days after 9/11
at
the fires
rose? I said, I have to leave early tonight. I have to catch a flight to L.A. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a direct flight. We have to make a stop at the Empire State Building.
Now that's a kind of a funny joke.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty well-crafted joke. Uh-huh. And people did not like that.
Wow. It was like, if you told me I was up there for 200 years after saying that joke, that's what it felt like. They were booing and hissing, and chairs were screeching away. And one guy yelled out, too soon. And I thought it meant I didn't take a long enough pause between the setup and punchline. And I should have done 1, 2, 3, and then said Empire State Building. But then I figured, why not go to the bottom level of hell?
Yeah.
At that point, I start doing the aristocrats joke.
Yeah,
famously
bawdy joke.
Yeah, and it's all incest and bestiality.
Yeah.
And so they were
And you redeemed
howling.
Yourself by the end
yes.
of it. That's what's amazing.
They're howling and cheering. Yeah. I mean, the place explodes.
Yeah, they applauded your resilience.
Yeah. To me it meant terrorist attacks, bad taste, incest and bestiality, good taste.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would applaud that because I think, you know, there's no bigger way to stand up to terrorists than to mock them, to say you're not going to keep us from being able to laugh and be happy and speak our mind and have free speech and all this.
Yeah, but I kind of think like if the terrorists had heard like, you know, how the Americans were acting and you said, they're making jokes and laughing about it, they go, what the hell? Damn it. But they're supposed to be hiding under their couches now.
Yeah, they're afraid of Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with comedian Gilbert Gottfried. We'll be back in just a moment. Hey, folks. Do you like reading, but you find it's getting harder and harder to make time to curl up with a good book? Well, there's a solution. Give audiobooks a try. They're perfect for your commute to work or if you're working out at the gym, a relaxing bath, or any time, really. And right now, you can take an audiobook for a spin with a special promotion just for our listeners from Audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics to get a free 30-day trial and download any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now back to more with the hilarious Gilbert Gottfried. You have this fantastic podcast that you started, I guess, around the time that I started my podcast. It's called The Amazing Colossal Podcast. And I guess it's an extension of your lifelong love of old movies and old TV shows old Hollywood that goes back to childhood, huh?
Yeah, because, well, when I was a kid, I remember the best film school in the country was in your living room because they used to fill it with old movies. And Like, one channel would have the old gangster Bogart, Cagney, and Robinson movies. And then the next channel would be, like, the Universal horror films. And you'd even see, like, they'd all even the show classics. Silent films.
Oh, really? On network television or local stations?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything popped up then.
Before TCM.
Yeah. Huh. And the most obscure things, they just need filler. And I became fascinated with old movies, and then they had the variety shows.
Oh, yeah. You're a big fan of those.
Oh, both old and new stars were on that, and that fascinated me.
Yeah, and it's such a fun podcast because you have all of these old stars, old comedians, old actors, songwriters, writers, and it's kind of like you're archiving stories.
Oh,
the great stories of entertainment in Hollywood. And it's so fascinating. And it's great that someone's doing that.
These
stories won't die with the people. Because your guests are dying off.
Oh.
You know, you're well aware of that.
Oh, I don't know how many times I've had an idea and I'd say, oh, God, you know who I'd love to have on the podcast? And I'll write their name down on a piece of paper and they'll die. They'll die before I get to the last name, before I've written down the last. Because, I mean, it is. We're going to have Jack Carter on the show.
Right.
And he died. This old character actor, William Shallard, he died after he agreed to do it.
Well, yeah. And when Jack Carter, let's say, canceled his appearance, you brought in instead Pat Cooper, who's kind of in a similar vein.
Yes.
And he's one of those ones. I love it when you have a guest who I feel like they're wheeled in with an oxygen tank.
Oh, yeah.
And it's these old show folks who seem to just be hanging on because they still have a bunch of axes to grind with people.
Oh, yeah.
And they use your show as, like, to go off on everyone who's ever done them wrong. And it's like, you're like, oh, you know, what was it like on this movie? And it's like, you know, they'll be like, oh, Milton Berle is a son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
He stole my act. Or so-and-so still owes me $500.
I met this guy, what is his name now? Damn, the amazing something, Carl Ballantyne.
Okay.
The amazing.
I don't even know
the
that
legendary
name.
Carl. He's one of these guys. I think he was in McHale's Navy, and he's popped up in movies and TV shows. If you saw him, you'd recognize the voice, like a big kind of grumpy Jewish guy with a putty face. And he was very funny. He used to do a made-up magic act, you know, where he'd do these tricks that all go wrong, and he'd mutter something angry and go on to the next trick. And he was very funny. So I met him one time, and I was talking to him, and to that day, decades later, he hated Jerry Lewis because he was opening for Martin and Lewis. So that's how far back it is.
Wow.
That is old. Jerry by himself. And it was an outdoor arena and it was raining out. And Jerry said to Carl, he goes, you know, go out there. The crowd's going to be or start to riot if there's nothing going on. And he goes, no, I'm wearing a tux. It's raining out there. He goes, and Jerry goes, I'll buy you a new tux. And he goes out, and his tux is ruined, and Jerry never bought him a new tux. And to this day, he remembers every word.
Yeah, it's always funny. You get these old people who they just won't let go of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's the only thing keeping them alive. Now, Jerry, is Jerry one of the big gets that you would like to get? Because I know that you really love Jerry. You talk about him all the time on the show.
Yeah, I'd love to have him on, but that's like, I guess what they'd call a hard get.
Well, and but he likes you, apparently.
Yeah, he seemed to be nice, but I don't know if that translates into coming on my podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things about your show is you have a penchant for ribald tales of old Hollywood stars' sex lives. There's the Danny Thomas story, which I won't get into because my mom listens to this. My mom from Texas, you know, who's so she's somewhere between Margaret Dumont and like, you know, the Queen in terms of, you know, and I know that she'll totally listen and she'll laugh, but then she'll tell me, I don't know. But, there's the Paul Lynde story, which I love. And then I wonder, is this your personal favorite, the Cesar Romero story?
Oh, yes, yes, okay. Cesar.
Tell us about Cesar Romero.
And also, of course, any chance we have to talk about Milton Berle's penis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
I can verify the stories about Milton Berle. Because when I was at the Friars Club, like I said, I was the youngest guy. And the problem is, I have the exact same story as Jeff Ross, the same story that he told on your show, the comedian, because Milton was really old. He wasn't getting around very well. And I would sit at his, he would have a big table with a lot of people. I would sit there at lunch and then, you know, it kind of peter out. And around 2:30 or so, you know, I was the last person left. And he asked me to help him to the bathroom because he didn't get around very well.
Oh, geez.
Literally the same story as Jeff Ross. So I help him to the bathroom and, you know, I'm almost wondering if this was some kind of come on, the fact that it comes up twice with two different people, the exact same situation. But yeah, so he goes to the bathroom, he whips it out, and the legends are true.
Oh, geez, absolutely. So you saw it.
Yeah, I did. It was the size of a five-year-old. I don't know. But you know, the only reason I knew this, because it's not a big secret. Everyone in Hollywood knows
Milton Berle
has his famous appendage. It was even referenced on Friends once, believe it or not.
Yeah, even in that Louis cartoon, when Louis Anderson had a children's cartoon, where his father is supposedly gets locked out of the house naked, and he goes, oh, I wish I was Milton Berle. And it is. I mean, this is one of those that there are so many of these legends that no one can actually
verify.
Yeah. But boy, Berle's penis.
Yeah. Now, what's this?
In fact, I heard that one time there was at some event, one of the trolls from The Wizard of Oz.
The trolls.
What were they
called? I
think
the PC term is little people now.
Yeah.
We can't even say midget anymore. I love that you call them trolls.
One of the freaks. One of those guys that escaped from the circus. So, what were they calling him? The dwarves?
On Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, the Munchkins.
Yeah.
I like Charles better. Yeah, one of the Munchkins, original Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz, was still alive. And he was at this event, and Milton Berle was there. And Jack Carter goes over to Milton Berle. He points to the Munchkin, and he goes, hey, Milton, this guy's as big as your cock.
Well, I know you have to go pretty soon, but tell us the Cesar Romero story.
Cesar Romero, I mean, in the movies.
The legend.
Yeah, yes. He was a Latin lover. And, you know, he had the mustache. He even kept the mustache.
Right.
He's the Joker.
Yeah. He was a ladies' man in the movies.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the real classic. But in real life, he was gay. And what he was into was he used to gather up these boy toys, and he'd pull his pants and underwear down and instruct these guys to throw orange wedges at his ass. Now, some say tangerine wedges. So there are some arguments.
Yeah, the subject of much debate among film critics and citrus experts.
And one other person told me that he would stand ankle deep in warm water while he did this.
I'm still trying to imagine what that did for him.
I don't know when you wake up one day and go, it would be a turn on.
Well, I always feel bad for these people when you start telling these stories on the show, because they're all these unverified legends. And I feel bad for like Danny Thomas and these guys, because it's like you have this prolific career. You do all of this great work, all this humanitarian work and charities and St. Jude's and all this. And then you become known for something like that for the rest of your life. That ends up on your Wikipedia page, you know, for hundreds of years after you're gone.
But in a different category, of a category where I guess it's been proved, is the Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
1,000 years from now, if you say Bill Cosby, they'll go, oh, that
he'll never live that
down. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Any of his albums or TV shows? Forget it.
Well, I don't know. You better watch out. Someone might do that to you one of these days. Oh. Like, there's this story about Gilbert Gottfried and a sheep one time.
And he would stand ankle deep in warm water with the sheep while they flung coconuts at his ass.
Well, one of the things I love about you is I didn't even realize till you started your show, the Amazing Colossal Podcast, I didn't know that you do impressions, but you do impressions of people that no one's ever heard of. Like old Groucho Marx, not young Groucho, old Groucho.
Now there, those were some of the things how I would chase the audience out. I would do impressions of these people that nobody knew. I would go and, you know,
Sydney Greenstreet.
And so the way like some people would have, you know, in the old days, the impressionists would go, hey, if Cary Grant was your waiter, it might go something like this. And I would do it's like, and if John MacGyver was your waiter, has everything must go according to schedule. I run a tight ship here.
Yeah, because when I saw you do stand up a few months ago, you know, I feel you were doing impressions of like Al Jolson, and I feel like I was the only person laughing. And then you would do like Groucho Marx, but you would do Groucho when he was losing his memory and just rambling on the Dick Cavett
everybody
show.
Else was, you know, that's the nastiest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. You know, that got the typical Groucho. And I would like, I was fascinated with the old, with Groucho when he was old.
Yeah, like when you go on Dick Cavett or something. Yeah, and
it was like, I was once working and it was in a theater. And this was, now the theater was a place where you'd stand on a stage and there'd be people in the audience, and the audience was a name for people who would watch the show. A show was something that would go on stage.
And that, for people who haven't seen those interviews, that's pretty much a dead-on impression. Yeah. But every now and then he would still have that little spark, and you'd see a little of the old Groucho Marx
you'd
wit.
Like the eyes would light up and his voice would take on a more of a strength.
Well, I know that you have to go, but I appreciate your taking time to sit down with me. The show is called The Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing
Gilbert Gottfried's. Don't want it to confuse it with the other Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Yeah. Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
And do you have anything else that you want to plug coming up?
Well, it's on, you could hear it on GilbertGottfried.com. Subscribe on iTunes in the comedy category.
Terrific. Well, yeah, everyone should definitely subscribe and vote for it. You want to take us out with a little bit of The Dummy in the Window?
There used to be this black comedian named Larry Raglan. Today I thought I saw a dummy in the window. I looked and it was you wearing a new dress as usual, trying to look your best. Impossible, 'cause with you it's not really what you wear. Why don't you wash your face? It's a disgrace.
And that was part of his comedy act?
Yes, yes.
Good God.
That was my favorite part of it.
All right. Well, Larry Ragland and Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert, thanks so much for sitting down with me. This has been way too much fun.
Oh, and my Twitter is at Real Gilbert.
Okay, at Real Gilbert.
Twitter's
Definitely
an expensive hobby to have.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's how you lost the Aflac duck. Yes. Are you more careful about your tweets now?
No. Well, it's like I always say. Now I think twice about it, but I do it anyway.
Well, are you the guy who censors Donald Trump when he tweets too? Gilbert, I love it. You're too much fun. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks again to Gilbert Gottfried for coming on the podcast. I swear, I never laughed so much in my life. If you enjoyed my talk with Gilbert, and you know you did, you can subscribe to his podcast on iTunes. It's called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'll also include links for that in the show notes and on our website. His comedy album, Gilbert Gottfried Dirty Jokes, is also available on iTunes and Spotify. You can get the latest on Gilbert and his upcoming live appearances at gilbertgottfried.com and check out his podcast site at gilbertpodcast.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at @RealGilbert. Please subscribe to Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. And you can also help us reach our fundraising goal for the year and get rewarded by donating to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/kickasspolitics. Follow us on Twitter @KAPolitics or visit Kickass Politics on Facebook. And while you're there, recommend Kickass Politics to your friends on your social media. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.